This is Central Time. I'm Jean Purcell.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Recently, Wisconsin poet Ahmad Jamal Johnson's new book, Darktown Follies, was named one of the best poetry books of 2013 by Slate Magazine, and it's currently under consideration for an LA Times Book Prize.
Johnson's book focuses on race in America, as seen through the prism of history.
Ahmad Johnson teaches in the MFA program in creative writing at the UW-Madison. His book, Darktown Follies, is one we'll be reading from today. Ahmad, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, congratulations on having your book named one of the best poetry books of 2013 by Slate. How does that feel?
It's exciting and humbling. Most of creative writing is done in private, you know, closed doors. So it's a delight to have the book.
Did you think, gosh, people are reading it?
Well, you know, it's interesting partly because the audience is invisible. You know, they're few opportunities to really have to get to know poetry readers. So to kind of see a book get that much press so soon is really a delight. So,
well, your book is called Darktown Follies, as we said, and critics have described it as a take on race in America as viewed through the lens of vaudeville and the minstrel show. But how would you describe it?
Well, initially I was interested in jokes that weren't funny. I have a strange sense of humor. So there are ways in which I'm constantly trying to figure out what people find funny in vaudeville, you know, what made people laugh. Humor exposes a great deal of our kind of cultural moment. So thinking about, you know, the nature of racism in that moment and also kind of processing exactly what people respond to pulled me into those poems and think about those particular themes.
So did you go on a historical quest to sort of see what the bread and butter of vaudeville was?
Well, you know, reading sheet music, looking at some of the old video clips, and then just reading a bunch of old gag books really gave me a sense of the tone and just beginning to kind of process exactly what was at stake with some of those jokes.
And can you give us an example of one of the jokes that got you thinking and might have instigated some of the poetry?
Well, many of them were considered conundrums. You know, usually an African-American figure would be put in a situation that he would have to kind of think his way out of. You know, so the process of kind of managing the conflict was the joke. Certain things like he's his own grandfather or he swallowed an egg, which the heart of it was always, you know, violent, or, you know, he's his own grandfather ultimately suggests something about incest, which isn't funny. But to think about those things playing out on stage, yeah, just created some confusion for me. And that was enough to kind of pull me into the poem.
Well, speaking of he swallowed an egg, you've got a couple of poems I want to have you read. And let's start with one. You can read, if you want to read he swallowed an egg, why don't we start with there since we mentioned that one?
That's great. He swallowed an egg. Mr. Cleveland, seems like I got this shell nestled up just above my abdomen. Damnedest thing the shopkeepers touch. What you think bring a man into the inspiration to get all cat-like like that? Was whole under the custody of my tongue. Then before I know, gone. Say the moon's nothing but blown glass and God just gone and hit the straw. Say the heavens just like my hands after I've bled the hog good and clean and stars like barley fanned out across the coop. Here's my predicament. Cousin, if I move, the egg will get the lion's teeth. If still, then come all that waiting until that Shanghai rooster begins to claw at my belly, until he starts to itch for air.
Thank you so much for that. And that's an example, it sounds like, of one of the conundrums you're talking about, and it created a reaction in you. You thought about it.
Well, part of it is, I think, beginning to process what it means to move past the joke. Here, I'm imagining the consciousness of that figure, processing something possibly horrible happening, this rooster, hatching in its belly and ultimately killing him. So it's that moment, that hesitation, that helped me to process something about the consciousness of that particular character. And then that becomes the pleasure, building an image system, thinking of, syntax, of vocabulary that would make an imagined figure somewhat real and then turn it inside out, essentially.
Well, along the way, you do draw upon the lives of some famous voices in Black history, in writing, in vaudeville, in film. And for instance, you've got a poem about Burt Williams. Who was he?
Yeah, Burt Williams, maybe he was our Beyonce 100 years ago.
Really?
He was the best-selling African-American entertainer, recording star, and, vaudeville stage performer, around 1908 to 1915. W.C. Fields once said about Burt Williams that he was the funniest man he ever met and the saddest person he ever knew. So thinking about the absurdity of African-American comics performing in blackface also pulled me into this particular history. There's an absurdity masquerading people who are masquerading you, essentially, and attempting to kind of outdo them. So Burt Williams was central during that era.
And you've got a poem about him. Do you want to read us that one?
Yeah, this begins with an epigraph from Burt Williams. The man with the real sense of humor is the man who can put himself in the spectator's place and laugh at his own misfortune. Nobody. Bet you showed him, Bert. I mean, got their goat good the way you pulled that fist of 50s from your billfold and bought the whole bar around. Trace of burnt cork coloring the edge of your collar and your smile sliced wide as a melon's quarter moon. I see their faces outcropped and looming in the darkness, cigar smoke cross-hatching the air, and shadows clustered, all leaning in corners like small congregations of drunks. Light from Lafayette's marquee, Abyssinia, and the red lettering of your name wasn't enough to stop the barkeep's ribbing. Mr. Nobody, you sang. Oh, death, where is thy sting? And you, cakewalking with your eyes, pantomiming something like laughter.
Thank you for that one, too. Did you feel like you got to know these people as you researched them and you thought a little bit about what might have been unfolding inside their heads?
Well, part of, I think, the work of doing historical research is not just thinking about their lives, but almost trying to dream historically, imagining, what they must have read in newspapers, the kind of conversations they had, and, building that sense of intimacy. So then in writing a persona poem, it's not necessarily, simply a performance of voice, but really beginning to think about who they may have been, to establish that intimacy, to then think about these small corners, bits of language, image systems to help create a context for their identity.
Now, in most of the bios that I've read about you, the first line is that you were born and raised in Compton, California. Was growing up in Compton important for becoming the poet that you are?
In some way. I think the understanding of community and culture ultimately comes back from my time there. I always imagine an audience in certain ways, and I think the writing these poems, I'm constantly thinking about how they may play, in my family or play with my old friends. So manipulating diction, high and low diction. Also, I think just the political significance of history, always working to create some framework or context for our past. Compton has obviously been, in the news for several, decades in terms of violence. I think I've always tried to understand historically and theoretically where that violence comes from. So as a poet, I'm manipulating voices or thinking about narratives to help put something into context for myself emotionally.
I was thinking about how Compton, there's a lot of artists who've come out of Compton as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your book, as some critics have seen it, is sort of your take on the misfires about entertainment and Black culture. Do you see an intersection there?
Well, you know, as a Westerner now, I think there are ways in which seeing California from Wisconsin is interesting because I can really see what entertainment represents there. You know, if you have really cute kids, the first thing that people might say, it's like, oh, they should be in commercials.
Hmm.
You know, there's a degree of, you know, materialism that obviously is present in most major cities. I rejected that idea of being an entertainer. I think I always had real questions about what that meant morally, what that meant emotionally. So there are things, I think, that inspired this work, what it means to perform. Are there ways in which we can't avoid performance to a certain extent? So being critical or beginning to really think about what it means to perform versus be aware of you know, our performative selves is really key.
Ahmad, I want to thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for sharing your poetry.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking to Ahmad Jamal Johnson. He's an award-winning poet from Wisconsin. He teaches in the MFA program in creative writing at the UW-Madison, and his new book of poetry is called Darktown Follies. It was named one of the best poetry books in 2013 by Slate magazine.
I'm Gene Purcell.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.